All right, Alexander, let's talk about the speech last night from US President Joe Biden. Wasn't a State of the Union address, but it was. They just can't call it that. Anyway, he spoke to Congress in a speech that was a little over an hour, which is pretty incredible. That alone is incredible that that Joe Biden was able to address Congress for over an hour. The speech was very much written and tailored to accommodate Joe Biden as well, and you can get into that. So everything once again was very well stage managed, and it was a very empty Congress as well. Obviously, they said it was because of the various restrictions, but I also think not having that type of energy in the building also accommodates and helps Joe Biden so that he can stay focused as much as he can on delivering his shortened up lines. I saw the speech. It was nothing to talk about, to be quite honest. And the whole event was very low energy. And I think that's kind of the way I would describe the Biden Harris administration. So, what did you make of the speech, Alexander, and your thoughts on it?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the president and how he addressed the Congress and all that. And you're quite right. The speech itself was a very interesting speech in some respects, in terms of its format. First of all, you had only 200 people, I think, in the building. You can, of course, refer to the restrictions, but there's no doubt at all that emptying the building, having so few people there, essentially helps the president, this particular president, get through this kind of speech and this kind of event with the least possible difficulty. And I think we have to be straightforward about that. That's absolutely, I think, part of the agenda. The second is, I read the speech and as well as listening to it. And the fascinating thing about the transcript, it wasn't exactly the transcript because it was actually published by the White House before the president even delivered it, which is quite interesting, is that the words, it's the sentences are extraordinarily short. The words are extremely simple. There's a certain attempt to try to avoid using complex language and complex ideas. And it's again a speech that's clearly been made as simple as possible to work through. And by the way, at 1 hour, given the content of the speech, which I'm going to come to, it was actually, I thought, fairly short for what it was. Now, obviously, you could argue, if you wish, that sticking to one word sentences, as some of them were, and making your sentences as short as possible, and breaking up your paragraphs and doing it all like that makes the speech clearer. I don't think it does, by the way, not in this case. But of course, it does make a speech easier to deliver. And I think that was partly, in fact, that was the main reason for the agenda of the speech drafted as it was. But one point where I'm not sure I agree with you, by the way, is that I thought that though this was an extremely low energy event, the speech itself outlined a program which, on its face, is unbelievably ambitious. A few things immediately struck me. Plans for everything, plan for this, plan for that. I mean, I lost count of the number of plans. None of them costed. I mean, we've had all kinds of figures flying around in, debates and discussions, but there was absolutely no costing of any of these plans in the speech itself. But there are an enormous number of them now. They are enormously ambitious in and of themselves. They aim, I mean, this is a massively redistributive program. Raising taxes on the people that the president identifies as the rich, though, of course, let's be straightforward about it, they're not going to pay those taxes because those kind of people never pay taxes, and he's not going to address that issue either. But in theory, taxes on the rich. In addition, massive amounts of financial subsidies to people lower down on the income scale, direct subsidies, and spending all round on a scale like I have never seen since the 1960s, all justified on the basis of an economic depression, which isn't happening. Now, it really does all remind me powerfully of the 1960s, of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society programme, which is again an attempt to, transform the United States at record speed by showering money at all kinds of various programmes. And of course, all that ended up in a mass of inflation. And I understand that there are already increasing signs of inflationary pressures starting to pick up within the United States. For example, I've heard that some franchises up and down the country are actually paying workers to attend job interviews, because the payments that people are receiving now from the government actually exceed the amount they might expect to get in wages. So that's already an extraordinary thing. And it suggests very strongly that inflationary pressures are building up. So an extraordinarily ambitious programme. No discussion of the budget deficit, which is now running at 15% of GDP. No admission that over the last year, with quantitative easing, with the previous fiscal packages, the United States has already pumped money into its economy to the amount of 57% of GDP, a stimulus on a scale we've never seen, and a promise of unlimited spending on top of that. It is, as I said, a programme of extraordinary ambition set out in a sketchy way, in a low energy speech, to only a fraction of the Congress. Very bizarre state of affairs, very remarkable state of affairs, and shows where the priorities are, but it also shows an extraordinary lack of coherence.
Yeah, I think you're referencing McDonald's on some of the franchises that are actually paying workers.
Absolutely.
To I read reports around that as well. The whole thing with the content of the speech and everything he was saying, in my opinion, I look at it like there's nothing to write home about, because, you know, you're right. Everything, all the programs that he listed on there, that he started to talk about, seem like such fantasy world that it's just like, you're kind of like, this is to the point of beyond ridiculous. That it's like watching children ask for things, you know, and they ask for extraordinary things that, you know, you're never going to give them. So you just kind of, you know, tune them out and you say, yes, okay. Okay, son, or okay, daughter. Yeah, of course, I'll get you this and that. And they ask for more and you're just like, okay, whatever. That's what it's like. It's like listening to children say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to pay for this and pay for that and give you this and give you that. And everyone that listens knows this is just not going to happen. This is fantasy land. And all of this is taking place in this extremely low energy setting. Extremely low energy. So on the one hand, you're listening to literally fantasy world, a list of fantasy items. And on the other hand, you're just trying to keep awake. You know, you're trying to keep yourself awake as you're listening to this. I don't know if this is part of the misdirection that they're playing on us. But what I'm going to say is it may piss off people in the U.S., but I'll say it. Do you think that, not do you think, when I would watch Trump speak, say the State of the Unions, I felt like there was a certain energy. Something was rising. Once again, you don't have to like Trump's programs or like Trump himself, but the energy was there. There was no doubt that there was an energy there, right? And you felt like something was brewing. You know, something was on the move. When I listened to the speech last night, and I listened to the laundry list of things that he was talking about, and I said, this is fantasy land, I thought to myself, the list of things that, that Biden is rattling off, coupled with such a low energy environment, really, it feels like I'm watching an empire dying in a way. I mean, that's the impression that I got. The whole optics of everything, from the content of the speech to Biden himself, to the low energy, to the one word sentences, to no one in the crowd, no one sitting in Congress, an empty Congress. It just felt like I'm watching an empire just, you know, slowly just going to sleep. I mean, what do you make of what I said?
Well, the first thing to say is I very much hope you're right, that this is all fantasy stuff, because to be absolutely clear, this program is completely unrealistic and totally utopian. If it ever is implemented, it will not just fail, it will fail calamitously. I mean, you don't, even if you want to achieve the objectives that he outlined, you don't do it in this way. You don't just don't pour money at them. You have to sit down and you have to work methodically, look at what all the various bottlenecks are, work on them step by step, and gradually over time you achieve what you want. Trying to do it in this kind of way is going to guarantee a blowout. So maybe that's right. Maybe this is actually all fantasy, that nothing's going to happen, and that all of this is big words. And by the way, you're absolutely right. It did have very much the quality of Father Christmas coming along with his big sack, giving out the goodies. Something for nothing. You know, you want more money here, you want more money there, you want money for children, money for schools, money for science. You know, it's all that kind of thing. I mean, he's just giving it out. And, you know, he's saying, you know, all these bad rich people, they're going to pay. They're not going to pay very much, even if his tax plans are implemented in the way he says. But, you know, they're not going to be implemented in the way he says, because he's not really going to go after the people who back him. He's not going to go after, well, maybe we shouldn't name any names, but the people of the tech companies and the people in Wall Street. Then he's simply not going to do that. So, I mean, that there is an element of total unreality about this. But having said that, I mean, this is the program that he has announced. And it's, you know, I the fact that it was announced in this soporific way, I think perhaps is a bit of a distraction, because it takes away from the pure extreme radicalism of this whole program. And I would say something about that, by the way, a radicalism that is not needed by the situation. I mean, when Franklin Roosevelt, the president of immense energy, you know, and people are comparing him with Roosevelt, carried out a program like, you know, on a similar scale, greater scale, the United States was in a huge depression. The United States is not in depression. Its economy is growing. There is no need for this. The second is, there is no support for something like this in the country. Or at least, no, I say no support. The country, his popularity isn't very great. His approval rating is just over 50%. The Democrats do not have strong control in Congress. And the country remains very divided on many things. There simply isn't the overwhelming support in the country for a program of this ambition as there was in the 1930s and as there was in the 1960s. So it's fantastic and utopian, and it's not supported anyway. Now, I have to say, I hope you're right, in a sense, that, you know, none of this is real, and this is all, you know, a performance. You know, the president, because that's what he is, comes to Congress, because that's what it still is. There's nobody really there, nobody paying much attention. He behaves like Father Christmas, giving out his goodies. Nobody takes it seriously. We all go away and things carry on exactly as before, except, of course, that in fact, they really don't, because a situation where government has become a performance art. It's no longer government. It's simply a symptom, as you absolutely rightly say, of decay. And that is very bad. That would be awful if we had that kind of situation where the United States is in a state of decay. But the alternative, that there's some actual reality behind all of this, is quite possibly even worse, because it will intensify divisions. It will stoke up pressures within the economy, which it can't meet. It will expand all the various deficits to an extreme level, and it will create enormous instability. So, you know, it's not clear to me which of the two would be the worst option. Either this is real, in which case we're heading for a smash, or it is not, in which case we're going towards a gentle, that's not so gentle, but at least a decline, a decay of some of one or the other. It's one or the other. But what I will say is this: a real program to address the very real problems in the United States, this is not. And you can't expect that from an administration as ideological and as divided as this one is, and which actually has the low energy that you say. And when you talk about Donald Trump having energy and the current incumbent not having that energy, you are absolutely right. And I understand that there are some people who get annoyed when we say that, but it is a fact, and you can't wish facts away. So we will see how all this turns out. But, you know, gentle decline, or perhaps not so gentle decline, maybe ever faster decline, or a burst of feverish activity before it all falls apart. One or the other, take your choice.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I fear is the most likely outcome to all of this is that this type of program is not going to go through for various reasons. For example, not going against his donors, he won't be able to go after the very wealthy that put him in office. So that's obvious. So programs like this are not going to really work out. We are going to get inflation because, you know, that's just where the U.S. is heading. And I don't think there's going to be any way to turn around from that, given the current trajectory. But the one part of all of this that they will act on is seizing power and trying to change the way things work on an institutional level. And, you know, for that, we're going to go back to Supreme Court, back in the Supreme Court, D.C. statehood, abolishing the Electoral College, looking at the filibuster, all these things. I think the economic part is the fantasy land, and that's where they're going to talk up the fantasy while they're going to be working diligently to change the way the institutions are run and the way the government works. And I think that's going to be the sinister part to all of this.
Absolutely. I entirely agree. And I mean, I should say that this is a very strongly ideological speech. All the ideological talking points that we've become so used to, they're all there. I mean, it talks again about bipartisanship. This is, in that respect, there's nothing bipartisan about this speech. It was totally uncompromising. And it is all about ultimately trying to gain control of the institutions of the United States, consolidate them under the control of a party which has a particular ideology, so that ideology can be pursued and moved forward. There is no doubt at all about that. So we're seeing steady accumulation. I mean, he didn't talk about that aspect in his speech, but the direction, the trajectory of travel is clearly there, packing the Supreme Court, changing the electoral system, making D.C. and Puerto Rico states, doing all kinds of changes. All of that is there. And I'm going to say what I think about this. I mean, it is an America that is going to become Greater California. I mean, it has that kind of quality about this. Except, of course, one of the reasons California is able to hold things together is because it's got the rest of the United States, that's there. But if you expand all the sort of policies about California, all of California. I mean, the sort of ideological mindset that the Democratic Party has in California. If you try and extend that all over the entire United States, you can imagine what the results of that will be. Not, I think, very happy.
Yeah. Real quick, any comments on Tim Scott for the Republicans, who gave the answer to Biden's speech? Many people are saying that this is a hint that Scott is the Republican establishment choice to run in 2024. What do you make of that?
Well, he was, and he is. I think I would agree with that. I mean, to be honest, I didn't think he made a particularly effective rejoinder. I think he could have said exactly what you said, that this is all a completely utopian fantasy program, that the Republicans are going to oppose it because to do otherwise would be to put in jeopardy the United States. He's talked in that kind of way, but I didn't find he was particularly compelling, and I think he will be brushed aside come the primaries. That's my own view. I don't know whether many people agree, but that's certainly my view.
Do you see this as a signal that not that the Republicans had any choice, they had to put someone in the party to speak, but do you see this as a signal overall that the Republicans are definitely looking beyond Trump in 2024? Or that's their desire, at least from the establishment side of things?
I was going to say that. I think that there are some people within the Republican establishment who are absolutely looking to look beyond Trump. But the reality is that within the grassroots, it is going the other direction. We've seen people like Liz Cheney and Murkowski facing increasing challenges. And I predict and expect that that will intensify over the next few months. So I think the attempt to marginalize Trump, which is still being made, is ebbing and failing. But of course, they still go through the attempt to keep it going.
Okay. All right, guys. We'll leave it there. I'll put a discount, 10% off all the merch at the Durant Shop. 10%. Use the code REALNEWS. Take care.